shots do declare, here comes the colonel on the air.
Ah, yes, everybody's a comedian. Everybody's a comedian! And they sneak in here to disrupt this very serious science show. All right, welcome back. The second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow here at the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, IEEE, Global Humanitarian Technology Conference, open innovation, everything right here at your fingertips. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. And we're going to get just a minute back to Keith Moore. He's the chairman of the IEEE Global Humanitarian Technology Conference for 2013. Keith has been with the conference right from the beginning. We've had numerous conversations with him, and it's going to be fun, so much fun seeing him at the conference this year as chairman. And we're going to finish, we had him in the last half hour. We're going to finish up with him in just a little bit, bringing us up to date on maybe some of the things that we didn't get a chance to talk about. And then we're going to dial up Bill Wattenberg. Bill has a lot of great things to say about this particular humanitarian conference because he says a lot of conferences just provide, you know, lip service, but not this one. He said this one is true to its technology solutions. And he really has a lot of really good things to say about it. He's going to talk about what has been done as far as food drops to the needy from high-altitude airplanes when it was too dangerous to fly into to hot areas like we're in Srebrenica, where people were surrounded by the Serbs back a number of years ago. You probably remember that. And we also have a treat. We've got the House Republican Caucus Band playing Stall the Stars and Stripes Forever. You won't believe it, right here from D.C., led by John Boehner, the House Republican Caucus Band. Right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set for today's query. Huh? What do you say?
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I...
All right, I see. We've aroused the spirit of the fountain by just throwing in the coins. Mm-hmm. All right, oh, spirit of the fountain, I'm going to stump you this time. I'm not going to ask you who was buried in Grant's tomb. No, 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 that's far too easy. Oh, spirit of the fountain, here is today's query. How long did the Hundred Years' War last? Hmm? What do you say, oh, spirit of the fountain? How long did the Hundred Years' War last? Hmm?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the others.
Oh, wow. Oh, can't fool the spirit of the fountain. The Hundred Years' War. How long did it last? Well, the Hundred Years' War lasted 116 years, from 1337 to 1453. All right, well, let's get on with today's program. What do you say? Wow, is that fun. The Science News Studio Jazz Band. I love it, love it, love it. All right, well, in just a little bit, we're going to have the House Republican Caucus Band right in from Washington, D.C., playing Stars and Stripes Forever for us. But first of all, we got a little business to take care of. We want to say goodbye to Keith Moore, the chairman of the IEEE Global Humanitarian Technology Conference. It's going on October 20th through the 23rd at the beautiful San Jose Airport Garden Hotel, the Garden Hotel. It's all on one floor, very good for networking. I mean, it is going to be fun. We're looking forward to it. But before we let Keith get away, we had a few more things we wanted to ask him. What have we missed? What have I neglected to point out about this conference that you want to be sure and get out?
Okay. Well, there's always our awards ceremony. We have an awards ceremony each year where we present awards in humanitarian space. We're looking forward to that as well this year. Every year we have what we call our gold meeting. That's the graduates of the last decade. That's engineers who are less than 10 years out of school and still have that energy and excitement about getting started in their careers and doing something good with the knowledge they've gained out of school, and looking forward and just anxious to apply that knowledge. Every year we have a kickoff on Sunday evening of the conference, where we have a speaker come in that talks to those exciting possibilities for engineering the future, and we're looking forward to that again this year. The exhibits, we are a growing conference, and each year our exhibit space gets a little bit bigger. So we're looking forward to those exhibitors that are going to be coming and displaying their wares with us this year again. More information, always you can go to IEEEGHTC.org. That's IEEEGHTC.org.
All right, Keith, you've been working in the field of humanitarian relief for a long time. I remember I talked to you a few years ago when you were out in the field yourself and doing things on your own before you became the big leader here, the chairman of the Global Humanitarian Conference. Now, tell me on a personal note, what do you see in the future? I mean, where is this humanitarian thing going? Is it going to solve all the world's problems? Is it going to solve part of them? What do you see down the line in the future? Put on the meditation cap for a minute and give us a view to the future.
Okay, well, the future is a foggy myth, that's for certain, and no one can know for sure. I certainly don't hold any keys to what the future holds, but I can give you my thoughts. I guess I view myself as a realist. There's always going to be problems. There's always going to be issues. As long as there are people, and people are people, and we make mistakes, and we don't do things for the best of everyone involved, and there's going to be opportunities for humanitarian projects. I don't think we'll ever get away from that unless somehow we all become enlightened. But what we can do is look for those opportunities to help others. Look for those opportunities where we can make a difference. And down at that discrete level, we can see differences. We can see things that are improved. And if any way that we can use technology for the better, that's so much the better for it. As an engineer, that's what I look for, is those smart ways to make a difference out there.
All right, let me pin you down for a minute. Give me 5 years. What do you see in humanitarian worldwide to be accomplished within, let's say, the next 5 years? What's the big thing?
Humanitarian, within the next 5 years, accomplishments. I would say there's probably going to be a proliferation of consumer devices that allow life to be easier, even out in undeveloped countries. I think there will continue to be, I think the cellular technology has taken off in undeveloped countries. I think there will be other consumer electronics that will continue that same march, that it provides communications, provides access to technology at lower and lower prices in the upcoming years. I hope that's the case, and I think it probably will be.
All right, Keith Moore, Chairman, Global Humanitarian Technology Conference, the IEEE. For 2013, October 20th through the 23rd at the San Jose Airport Garden Hotel in California. More information at IEEEGHTC.org. Keith, thanks so much for being with us. It's very rich, and we're going to look forward to seeing you in San Jose.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, Carl.
Okay, just before we get to today's treat, in from Washington, D.C., being led by Speaker of the House John Boehner, playing a number they call, let's see here, Stars and Stripes Forever or Never, or maybe not as long as they're in charge. But before we do that, we want to check in with Bill Wattenberg from Lawrence Livermore Labs, who's got a lot of really nice things to say about the IEEE Global Humanitarian Technology Conference going on in San Jose, California, and some of the things that he has done from Lawrence Livermore Labs in humanitarian relief, unique ways of feeding people in distressed areas when we couldn't transport it in, feeding from the air. So anyway, this is what happened. We dialed up Bill.
Stand by.
Hello, I'm living for Bill Wattenberg.
And who is this lady, huh?
This is Colonel Mason. I'm a reporter with the Science News Radio Network, Bill, and
I have you on the list here. I thought that was you. We've never spoken before, but I get so many crank calls I have to check, as you can imagine, you know.
Absolutely, I can imagine that very well. I was quite interested in the things that you had to say and wanted to talk to you a little bit about it.
An overview of all these projects we've done at Livermore over the years. And, Colonel, the main problem is, first of all, you should understand I've been a long-time member of the Nuclear Weapons Design Group.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Pentagon usually comes to us when all else fails or they can't get anybody else to do something. But these humanitarian projects, as you call it, really don't get top scientific journal coverage, if you know what I mean. They're not high tech.
Yeah.
No scientific breakthroughs involved. It's simply taking what we have to work with and finding some clever way, if possible, to get a damn problem solved. Mm. And I think I gave you a summary, or them a summary, with references on some of them, but some of them, frankly, are just grossly underappreciated compared to what should be done around the world. Give you an example, that dropping food packages to refugees is probably the simplest low-tech thing we ever did.
Yeah.
And with the greatest impact. But you have entrenched relief agencies like the United Nations that just resist like hell changing anything, no matter who's starving on the ground. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that's certainly a news story. I presume you talk about that a lot on your own network.
Well, once in a while. And I try not to do, you know, my own stuff too much, because I run a show that's frankly for the audience, and what they want to talk about, I have to tackle anybody on anything over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And they pay me well to do that, so I try not to make it a backslapping job, you know, on myself.
Yeah. Well, Bill, the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference, this is like the third year that IEEE has been putting it on. It's been in Seattle, you know, the past couple of years, and now it's in San Jose. And I can understand what you're saying. This is different than from so many of the other conferences that are just giving lip service to humanitarian relief. But this one is really digging in, real strong with technology. And coming up with real solutions, and I'm sure that's why you got in touch with us, and we'd like and giving your ideas from Lawrence Livermore Lab and all your vast experience on practical ways of solving the global humanitarian challenges that we face so much today. That's of course what you're saying.
There's so many conferences like this that really aren't in the high-tech, far-end scientific end, that they don't really spend much time with them. Their attitude is, we'll solve the problem, tell the public, give it to the press, they can do it as they please. The popular press has covered all this stuff quite well, and to some degree, Science Magazine, has given little brief blurbs on what happened. For instance, dropping the food packages, they had a column on that. At the time when we did it. And, of course, it was very significant. You may remember in Bosnia, there was a city, Srebrenica, something, I can't remember the name.
Yeah, Srebrenica.
Yeah, it was surrounded by the Serbs. They were starving them out. Well, that was the first place it was used. I had been begging the Pentagon for 3 years to use it after Iraq and assault on the Kurds. It didn't dawn on them that you could drop food packages from high altitude, and it makes no difference what altitude, by the way, because they quickly are limited by air resistance, you see. And so it's highly ideal to be able to drop them from 10,000 feet where the ground forces can't shoot at your cargo plane.
Yeah, no doubt.
If you're going to drop them with big parachute pellets, they have to come in low to have any reasonable accuracy. Otherwise, you're just feeding the enemy, if you know what I mean. So the airmen and the military loved it, and you'll see how extensive it was used in Afghanistan. But when it was first used in Bosnia, it hit world press everywhere in the trade journals. Anyway, if you look at the video there, you'll see how impressive it is. They said, several hundred thousand all winter that way, and had nothing but praise because the airmen didn't have to take any risk, and it was duck soup to do it. Well, here comes Heidi and other places, and you can't get these damn relief agencies. Well, they actually, excuse me, got a little cold. They actually objected the Pentagon and the White House that we're stepping on their toes because, you know, they gather hundreds of millions and stock up warehouses with stuff you can only deliver by trucks, and they've got armies of workers scheduled all over the place, and that's all they want to use, even though it takes them 3 months, 3 weeks to get there, and you've lost 50,000 people, you know?
Yeah, so what you're saying is the agencies are very territorial, and they don't want somebody else coming around there and getting the glory when they're trying to figure things out for themselves.
Oh, you bet they are. They don't give a good example. I mean, the doctors and many reported probably 30 to 40,000 died needlessly in Haiti because they couldn't get supplies to them within, you know, in the first 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You take the children and the sick and the crippled, they never get even the relief trucks. They can't get close to them, you see. But the UN Relief Agency took over the show, and the White House and the U.S. government would not interfere in any of the relief operations as far as delivering food and water. They refused to. I mean, the whole history of key senators trying to get the White House and the Pentagon to do something, and they wouldn't budge. So it was, no, let the UN Relief Agency do. Well, that was their cop-out, so they didn't get blamed for any failures like George Bush and Katrina, to be honest about it, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. I understand.
So that's sort of the history on that one. Now, even after the Gulf War, well, look, we were heavily involved in the first Gulf War. I'm the guy, by the way, that was sent by the U.S. Department of Energy to help put out the Clay Oil fires, if you remember those. All that history is written up, by the way, in the university reports that I sent. Just go to www.watsonburg.us, and there's a university report there of all these projects and adventures. And anyway, I was over there putting out the Kuwaiti oil well fires, and the Kuwaitis and their contractors wouldn't even use this helicopter to clear the mines out of the open desert areas, which is duck soup, because it was a lot cheaper to hire Pakistani soldiers.
Oh, jeez.
And they only killed about 30 of them in a year's time. But, you know, they could get Pakistani soldiers for $20 a day and line them up with rods to crawl on the ground and go find the mines. So that's what they did.
Wow.
Well, look, anything I can help with just to get broader use of these things, but Colonel, just take a look at them. Look at the videos. Look at the tests, and you can imagine if there'd be more use of these things. It was all done with public money when they came to Livermore. The government always comes to us. There's no patent, you know, personal, you know, gain in any of it. If they'd make better use of it around the world, they'd save a hell of a lot of lives. You know, they figured they saved a good 10,000 lives in Afghanistan with the food drop, and a good several thousand in that city in Bosnia the first time they tried it. But getting the Pentagon to move took 3 years for them to try something that simple and stupid.
Well, Bill, you make a lot of sense, and I want to thank you a whole lot for having the conversation with me today. I really do appreciate it.
Well, hey, I'm delighted you called and appreciate talking to you. Get a hold of me anytime. You've got my cell number here. And if they're interested, I have no problem going to San Jose, and it doesn't take, there's no honor. I mean, the university will pay for it.
All right. I appreciate it a whole bunch, Bill. Thanks a bunch.
Hey, thanks for your time.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Now we have a special treat for you right from Washington, D.C., the House Republican Caucus Band, led by Speaker John Boehner. This is in honor, of course, of our going over the fiscal cliff with the sequestration that just happened and, of course, limiting all the government spending for all our wonderful defense and all of our wonderful humanitarian efforts that are going on that the United States loves to do. So here it is, in all of its glory, the House Republican Caucus Band, right from Washington, D.C. Take it away! Thank you. Ah, yes. The House Republican Caucus Band is in its usual good form today. Yes, look, about to lead the House Republican Caucus Band is, of course, Speaker John Boehner. Here he is.
I'm looking, you're flogging beside. Wouldn't be looking, you're begging beside. And be off one mark in the line. For you'll be flexing so. My neighbor wouldn't play, wouldn't sin. He looked blitz and sharing fine and spots and the bice on their own. We are the Dutch and with the Yankee and the feeling.
All right, now, big finish from the House Republican Caucus Band in Washington, D.C. All right, there you have it. The House Republican Caucus Band right here in our studio, fresh in from Washington, D.C. As they do a number on us, they can do a number for us. All right, let's get on. And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Something I learned both in my high-tech entrepreneurial career, raising venture capital, but also in the nonprofit world, and I call it, never miss an opportunity to make a deposit in the Karma Bank. I found that if you kind of look at the golden rule and put it on steroids, do three times as much good as you could ever imagine people doing back to you in return. And I'm sure whether it's in your professional career or your personal life or in this sort of social good area, that if you go out there doing those kind of great things, you're going to get people to go out of their way to help you. And something great's going to happen to you that I think of as the one from the Karma Bank. You'll never be able to quite connect it directly with some good that you've done in the past, but I assure you, the connection is there, and I think that that's the essence of getting a company going in Silicon Valley, whether it's a for-profit or a nonprofit. I'm Jim Fruchterman, President and CEO of Benetech, a nonprofit technology company in Silicon Valley.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you. I